All right. So, Connor, brands, seven figures, low eight figures, they're getting to the point where it's not just the founder or the founding team anymore. They're starting to hire outside help. Give me a quick overview of why brands should hire freelance versus agency versus full-time. That's kind of the topic for today. I'd love just like an intro to get us kicked off.
Let's do it, man. So first of all, excited to be on the show. A couple things I want to clarify and caveat, because like some people might be listening to this episode and they just raised a $10 million round and they're like, Connor's advice has nothing to do with me. And like, I think this guy's pretty dumb in hiring. So one thing that I want to call out is, you know, all we do is we recruit for consumer brands. That being said, every piece of advice that I'm going to give today is primarily going to be for like more so that bootstrapped founder and somebody who's going from $0 on a Shopify dashboard to waking up and seeing, you know, $1 million days and growing up into that $500 million plus brand. Like, this is going to be the playbook because we've hired companies' first individual roles and the very first person on their team all the way up to working with $500 million brands and building out entire teams for them. So like, I'm going to walk through the process of that scale, but I just want to at least caveat that like, this advice does not apply if you just raised a round and are trying to grow.
Yep. Perfect. Awesome. Super helpful context there. So what is the main factor of like, I need to hire someone. I'm stuck. I'm the bottleneck now. How do you help founders kind of decide who do they hire? Do they come to you and say, hey, I need this role? Is it like, talk me through the process of how you guys kick things off.
Yeah. So in the dream world, and this is probably for every business across the planet, like hiring should be a last resort effort. Like you don't want to hire if you can avoid it. It's more money that it's going to cost you. It's going to be potentially more headaches. You know, there's more complexity whenever you're dealing with people. That's just the nature of it. So the fundamental reason that anybody hires at all is because they have a problem in their business that they want to solve, and they either do not have the time to solve it themselves or do not have the knowledge to solve it themselves. And so they need somebody who can figure that out, right? And so, you know, the way that we approach hiring changes, I would say, probably across four different levels. It's 0 to 1 million in annual sales, 1 million to 10 million in annual sales, 10 million to 100 million, and then 100 million plus. Those are just the big buckets, and like the things shift and change over time. And so when you are starting off, everything is a problem. The problem is that it is all your problem, and you probably don't have the resources, assuming that you're bootstrapping this and most of your cash is going towards inventory, ads, whatever, to actually hire somebody and do it. And so the number one goal that anybody should be trying to optimize for when going from 0 to 1 million is identify product market fit, have as little risk as humanly possible, and stay alive. Like, that's it. And so during that time, what you don't want is you don't want this massive line item on your P&L that's going to be a $100,000 a year e-commerce manager, that's going to be, you know, a $200,000 a year head of growth. Like, as the founder, you should be doing everything. And this is why starting a company is so hard. Like, you should be answering the first 100 customer support tickets. You should be building out that Shopify page. You should be making your ad creative. If you don't know Meta ads, pull up a YouTube video, learn it, and do it, even if it's an unoptimized campaign. Like, the goal here is to get forward momentum and forward progress, and then eventually you'll be able to build out a team around you. So that's kind of like that first stage. As far as like talent-wise in that role and in that bucket, like, your number one goal above all else is to find the most undervalued talent and support that you can possibly find. And so what that looks like tactically is like, if you need to create packaging and you're like, I can't use Canva for this, and, you know, I'm not going to spend the time, you know, the 40 plus hours, if not more, to like learn how to use Adobe Illustrator or Photoshop, like, what you should be doing is you should find the person that you went to college with who is like a graphic designer and has no freelance experience and like dramatically undervalues themselves, candidly. Like, that is what you have to do, is find somebody who doesn't realize their worth, and you should pay them on a per project basis to help you with that design. You know, find the guy who knows how to code and pay him on a per project basis to help you set up one of your landing pages or PDPs or whatever. And it's part of the reason that you see so many e-commerce and brand owners hire overseas talent very early on in the process, is because if the cost to them of never having to answer a customer support ticket again is $5,000 to $10,000 per year, that beats the hell out of doing a $65,000, $80,000, $100,000 per year customer support associate. And so that's the number one like theme above all else, is like, stay alive, try to grow. You're doing everything yourself, and find like incredibly undervalued talent. Ideally, you're hiring people who like don't do freelance and part-time stuff, because they probably don't know what they should actually be charging. And there's an arbitrage there.
Super helpful to start. I'd say that's generally a theme going into seven figures is undervalued still, because you're still, if you're making 10% net profit at a million, that's still only 100K. Mm-hmm. You're not swimming in cash just yet. I think that's a theme we'll see in the next bucket. But once you get to that million, where do you start to see, what's the most common role? What's the questions that you ask? How do you kind of advise on that next hire?
It's fairly simple. So one, I would say the types of roles that are probably most common in the 0 to 1 million spot, it's like Filipino customer support agents, Filipino overseas operations managers, maybe starting to hire down like Latin America or South America as well. And again, all of these candidates coming in with the standpoint of like, let's take the lowest value thing that you are doing today and take it off your plate. And so if that means that like every time you get an order, you shouldn't be doing this, you should be doing this with technology. But like, let's say that you are taking that order and bringing it to your 3PL and you're saying like, ship it out and like doing quality assurance on that, like hire somebody to do that. Build out an SOP, hire somebody to do that and like focus more on the high level strategy. So that's 0 to 1 million. As far as that next stage, this next stage is where it gets a little bit more messy. So 1 to 10 million, you have two goals, right? At this point, you found a little bit of product market fit. If you're selling $1 million a year, it's not a ton, but like people are buying your stuff and you're like, okay, there's this thing's got legs to it. So the two goals from here, number one, get out of ops and fulfillment work. You know, by nature, most founders of D2C brands tend to be marketers. So like, let's get you back into the thing that you are the best at, that's going to have the highest return of your time and take off some of the more administrative stuff. And then secondly, it's going to be getting execution support on the marketing side. And so basically what that means is you're going to be probably hiring into operations, customer support, potentially some demand planning stuff to make sure they're not running out of stock, still with the goal being execution focused, like probably overseas, probably junior, generalist, project manager, something like that. Most hires at this stage tend to be generalists. Like you're not hiring very many specialists at all at this point in the process, solely because you can't afford to have a big gap across your entire funnel. And so probably the most common two roles that we see hired at this stage from a marketing standpoint, it's an e-commerce manager, super broad title. E-commerce manager is basically the quarterback project manager across most of the org. This person's going to say, all right, we're going to launch that Labor Day sale, or you need a little bit of help on the Klaviyo retention side, we're going to help there. Or, you know, if you want any kind of like store management, campaign planning, whatever, like we'll support across that. That's probably number one. And then the second two would probably be like more overseas of what we talked about, 0 to 1, like you're going to have more agents, more ops people, whatever. And then a lot more like post-production assets. So like rather than asking, you know, Sally from school to like make you, you know, a landing page graphic, now you'll probably hire again an overseas graphic designer, video editor, you know, render artist, whatever you need to scale up at this stage to get some extra firepower. That's probably like the one specialized role that you would hire at this stage.
And that's 1 to 10 million for that, those buckets, or is that just at one? And then as you keep growing, then you start
That's probably 1 to 10. You know, as you get closer to that 10, you know, you're going to be hiring more people. Like ideally, you know, at this stage is probably like the highest peak of when you're going to be working with like agencies and creative freelancers. Like what I would say is it's probably a front weighted bell curve where like day one, do everything yourself. You know, then it quickly spikes up to like, I need as much part-time work. I need undervalued people. I need agency arbitrage where like I get three people all kind of working part-time that somebody's packaging up nicely at a $5,000 a month retainer for me. Like I need all of that. At scale, you're going to go back to more specialized work, but this is probably the stage where like somebody's doing your media buying, like you're not doing the media buying. Somebody's probably supporting you on the creative strategy front. Like the higher up you scale towards 10 million, the more resources that you're going to be able to afford across that team.
Yeah. So when you get to that towards the 10 million and even from 10 to 20, I'm sure it's a little different and it varies on the founder background and there's some other variables, surely, but what then you go from the part-time undervalue to full-time from overseas, like how do you decide when it's full-time based in the States or a freelancer, an agency? Like how do you kind of navigate that?
Yeah, so much of it's preference. Like I have some people who like, I have clients of ours who only want to have in-office talent and like, could they save money hiring customer support associates overseas? Yes. Do they think that their customers just like their product 10% more because they can get on the phone and talk to Beth or John, you know, on a Wednesday afternoon? Yeah, also true. So I think it depends on what you're selling and your personality. I think you know, at this stage, you're still looking for some level of arbitrage on like talent you are paying versus the output that you're getting. Nice part about being a consumer brand is like a lot of the roles on the marketing side are pretty high leverage. Like you find a really good, you know, creative strategist, they can legitimately add millions of dollars and you don't have to pay them millions of dollars. That's just how it works at this scale. So my thought would be like, you'd probably want to keep ops as low as possible because this person is tends to be looked at more as a cost center. Whereas marketing, like your main goal is to probably start trying to find a little bit of better talent. Eventually it'll get a little bit more specialized, but like, you know, right now it's probably like e-commerce manager who oversees a lot of it. And then maybe you'll find some kind of growth strategist person to start like, you know, holding the agency accountable, running creative strategy, whatever.
Cool. So what is, at this stage, instead of you doing something wrong and messing up as you're hiring, other people can make mistakes and like maybe the hiring was the mistake and it can like make shift things dramatically. Your purchase orders are much larger if you mess that up. If you're hiring a new agency and they just totally switch your ad account around, it can kind of take progress and momentum. What are some of these common mistakes of hiring either full-time or freelance or agency talent around this stage that you've kind of encountered yourself as you've run brands in the past and still do, or when you're working with your
yeah, I mean, this will probably get into something that we talk about more on like the $100 million plus stage, but like probably the number one mistake at this point would be hiring a specialist too early. You know, like I said, everyone's kind of got to be able to wear multiple hats at this stage in the business. And so if you're hiring somebody who's only doing email marketing for the business, like these types of roles get criticized because there are diminishing marginal returns. Like the first 10 hours a week of doing campaign planning and A/B testing are more valuable than the hours 30 through 40 being spent on that. And so like, it's not to say that this is not valuable, but that there are more valuable roles that you can hire for at this time where somebody might not be the best Klaviyo expert in the world, but they have a pretty good understanding of Klaviyo and Shopify and Gorgeous and are willing to manage and oversee all three of these things. And so, you know, you're getting the best use of those first 10 hours across multiple different categories week to week. So I would say, you know, keep things broad here, hire generalists, hire people that like, you know, can be very execution oriented. And especially if you're that type of founder who like, you like marketing, you recognize that a lot of this is going to be coming from you. Like, you should be continuing to own the strategy at this point, assuming that you are good at it.
Big assumption, but a fair one.
Yeah,
in most cases. So when you're actually hiring these more full-time, more generalist roles at this stage, this is oftentimes the first time that a role description or company culture or these sort of things actually start to matter. Like, you need to find the right fit and the right people. Is that something you guys help with? Is that like, what are some what are some things that are helpful to do or not helpful to do to attract the best talent or for you guys to find the best talent in your filtering process?
From a cultural standpoint?
Cultural, role description, like just like the actual tactical, hey, we agree we need to hire this role. How do we find the right role for us at this stage?
It's usually pain. It's usually just like this hurts the most not having it and it's costing us the most money by not having this person in place. So from that standpoint, like if you feel as though you are leaving millions of dollars on the table because your creative strategy is not up to par, that's what you should be hiring for. If, you know, customers are complaining left and right that their orders are arriving super late and you need an operations manager or somebody who's like, you want to like in-house your 3PL or whatever for some reason, like that's what you should be focusing on. Cool. So that would be number one from a, you know, what's the biggest urgency. From a cultural standpoint, like it's certainly getting defined at this point. Number one thing I'll say is that most culture comes down from the founders. And so like, if you have somebody who's super chill, laissez-faire, like go with the flow, like they probably don't need a type A person coming in the door. And even if they want the type A person, like that type A person wants to work with type A people. And so what I've found is like getting into the nitty gritty with clients of ours on the extremes has been very helpful. And what I mean by that is like, I'll point blank ask somebody, hey, you're a 10-person team right now. I recognize that culture seems like something that Netflix and Facebook talks about, but like it's real and it's going to get defined whether or not you are intentional about it. Tell me this. If I find you the best media buyer on the planet, but they're a total asshole, are you okay with that? And they're like, no, like I don't want to work with assholes. Like I'm too old. I'm too tenured. Like this matters too much for me. I say, great. Like, so culture matters a little bit to you then. And then basically we work backwards to define like who is right and who is not right. And oftentimes it's best defined by who do you not want to work with. And so like, you know, I see this a lot with the creative strategist industry where lacking maybe some of the most like politically correct terms in this situation, like creatives tend to be a little bit more, I don't know, like not like super type A business motivated, like a little bit more like free spirited, let's call them.
Yeah.
With the creative strategy space, you absolutely want somebody who's hyper analytical, like very type A and like wants to be rigorously testing. And that's a hard thing to find. And so like that is a cultural difference that we try to push on a little bit more for creative strategists that we interview.
Sweet. So when that's happening, you ask them the questions, you start with what they don't want, you kind of narrow it down. And to begin like the search, you get your kind of crafting the role description, the postings, and kind of, or are you guys kind of going out and just finding people through your database and searches? Like, what do you advise founders on if they're not working with you? Like, to kind of,
I mean, I can tell you right now, we've done a lot of roles this year for consumer brands. If I had to use a number, like out of the, 100 plus that we've worked on, one or two get placed via an inbound job application. I tend to find very often that the best talent is not looking and needs to be convinced and sold on why they should be leaving their nice, high-paying job, where if they're good, their boss is probably giving them a lot of money and a lot of recognition. And so now it very often has to be poached.
So how does one poach someone? I'm a founder. I've never poached anyone. Yeah. Like, I haven't, like, candidly, personally, breaking the third or fourth wall here, whatever. I don't know how to do that. Like, how do I even go about that? How do I find these people who already have a job? Is it just looking at the big brands and like come work at a small brand? I know that can backfire sometimes. Like, so how do you kind of navigate that? How do you advise on that?
I mean, it's like dating. Like, you need something, you know, if you're trying to ask the, you know, the prettiest girl at the dance to be your girlfriend, but, you know, you're shy in the corner, you got bad breath, you don't look good, you know, you don't have a job, whatever, like, you're not going to get the prettiest girl at the dance. Like, that's how it works. So like, number one is like, you know, becoming somebody, be building a company worth attracting the best talent, number one. And so that's a lot of like, what benefits do we offer? What pay can we offer? Why is our product better? Why is this an exciting mission? You're like, why is our team really good right now? And like creating a compelling craft of different narratives of why you are a really good brand that people should be working with. That's number one. Number two is that like, you go up to them and you basically, it's like dating. Like, you say, hi, I'm Connor. This is the company I own. I think that you're great. I think that we have a really big mission ahead and I want you to be a big part of it. Like, get on the phone with you for 15 minutes and see if there's anything there. We craft our messages a little bit differently. Like, yeah, a combination of like, you know, we've done 3,000 plus interviews this year. We've, reached out and sent millions of emails, messages, cold calls, whatever, like to get the best people on the phone. It's just a lot of reps, frankly. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it does. And that's why people would want to work with a service like you. That becomes the founder's job, is then to going away from out of the ad account, out of Shopify a bit, and into how do I get the best talent? No longer it's just the under leveraged talent, right? It's more of like this high quality talent at this stage.
Totally.
Sweet.
So, and then I think that's also then, you know, that's probably a good transition point to go from that $10 to $100 million bucket, which I recognize is a very big bucket. But it's just around like, you know, eight figures, let's call it. Eight figure brand, seven, eight figure, nine brand, where this stuff starts happening. Things that start evolving in this bucket, and listen, it might happen at 20 million, it might happen at 50 million, but like it does happen, is you start finding that you need people with more expertise and you start becoming more okay with people who are not strategy and execution oriented. The amount of times I jump on a call with somebody who says, I need somebody who's both strategy and hands on keyboard. And I say, that's great. Like, don't we all? And like, it's, you know, we can find you people who are up and coming and smart and hands on keyboard. But like, if you're looking for somebody running strategy at a nine figure brand that wants to start over again and be in the weeds at a $10 million brand, very rarely do people want to go backwards in their career once they've gotten these titles. And it just doesn't work out as much. And so what then starts to come up is you start to hire VP level roles, you start to hire director level roles. These are people with deep expertise, with deep strategy, and you start letting them influence the strategy of that department. And so using, you know, paid media a lot of times people will then start hiring a head of growth. That head of growth then either says, great, let's manage this agency, let's manage this creative strategy agency, this media buying agency, you know, this affiliate agency that we're working with, whatever. Or they say, these agencies aren't cutting it based on my vision for the brand. Let's bring this stuff in-house. At this stage, you tend to find that freelancers get used less and less from the 10 to 100 million. And instead, it's more of the smart internal strategy person. And then they either start building out an in-house team or they rely heavily on agencies up until they get a little bit higher from a revenue standpoint.
I feel like this might be a whole separate episode, but the head of growth, if you hire too early, I think you kind of get into that issue of having been a head of growth a few times and been an early head of growth hire and it not working out. I have my thoughts on this, but would love to hear, like, when is the right time to hire that position? Is that even the right position to hire for in a lot of cases? Is there a thing you would advise instead of hiring a head of growth? And I'm talking at the 10-ish million, still low eight-figure range for now. Like,
yeah,
what's your thoughts on this?
At 10 million, I don't know, probably not. Listen, people will frequently hate on titles, and I understand why, because it can get political, it feels very corporate. And when you're a startup, it's like, oh, we don't care about corporations, we just want results, whatever. You can say that all you want. Titles matter to candidates, titles matter to people. And I, as a hater of titles prior to being a recruiter, I have now been in this space long enough to realize, okay, they actually just matter. And I was ignorant on the subject matter. And the reason I'm harping on titles, and that's not your question, is because head of growth is the most like confusing title on the planet. Like, do you want this person to be VP level seniority? Or do you want this person to basically be a glorified growth strategist coming out of an agency where they have, you know, 4, 5, 6 years of experience and their hands on keyboard and they've worked across multiple 8 and 9 figure brand accounts? Like, it's a confusing subject matter. And people call it head of because they're like, well, I want it to be attractive enough to recruit somebody good, but like, I want them to be junior enough to like still do the work. And it's like, all right, let's just call it a growth manager, honestly, because at that point, you're at least getting somebody where they feel like they're making a move up in their career, but they're not expected to be some like white glove C-suite level role or position. So to answer your question, like you look at some of these $500 million brands, they have a 10, 15% growth team where it's like growth strategist, senior growth director, associate growth director, you know, VP of growth, whatever. Like, and people are at this $20 to $50 million mark being like, this growth person is going to make or break my business. Wrong. They're not. And so what I would very strongly urge and recommend is defining what you want. Do you want somebody who's going to be hands on keyboard? At which point I would say, you know, 20 million, that's fine. That's good. Like, do that. Or do you want somebody who's like truly leading the entire customer acquisition strategy on the D2C side? At which point I would probably wait until you're like a mid or higher 8-figure brand to really get in the weeds on that.
Yeah. I think too early, it's still in the founder's hands and they can't upwardly impact and influence the financial decisions. And like, it's usually top down of like, here's our costs, here's the targets, that's it. Like, there's no like back and forth, there's no strategy involved. It's more an executional role if you're too early. We kind of talked about the other first three buckets so far, fourth bucket, 100 million plus. What can people start to like look ahead about?
So at this point, this goes back to something that we talked about earlier in the conversation, which is diminishing marginal returns, right? You're an email marketer only. That's all you do all day long. You know, the best bang for your buck those first 10 hours a week, and you have diminishing marginal returns in those last 10 hours a week, let's call it. The thing that separates $100 million brands versus, you know, the $10 million brands is that they look at those diminishing marginal returns and they say, well, that's still returns. Like, if I'm getting, you know, I'm making up total numbers here, but like, if their first hour of the week is driving me $100 and their last hour of the week is driving me $30 and I'm paying them $10 an hour, that's still 20 extra dollars that I'm making. And it's not as productive, but it's still money, period. And so you see a lot of these $100 million brands, like one, they're bringing everything back in-house. You know, they are sometimes still using agencies. That's totally still a thing. But very oftentimes they are saying like, I would rather get the difference of the markup that the agency is charging me and just put that towards hiring better talent. And then the second thing I would say is that there are some types of roles or positions where like they might be still better off hiring an agency. A good example is like TikTok is a big channel for brands right now. And if you're $100 million plus brands and you're looking at TikTok and you don't have expertise to even make that hire in the first place, you're probably saying like, do I need to hire a TikTok creator manager? But then who's going to run the Spark ads and who's going to do the listing management? And like, who's doing all of this Discord management? Is it the TikTok creator manager? And so if you don't know that, and you don't want to hire several people or like put the spark ads on your media buyer responsibility or whatever, hire an agency. Like just do it. You can bank on their expertise and you don't have to think about it. But over 100 million, you'll often get people at a better price. And rather than working on 4 to 5 accounts, they're working solely on yours. And this is where like, is it less efficient on that last hour? Maybe, but you're still growing. And so that would probably be my biggest piece of advice at that stage is like most people are going in-house. There's a reason you see these $500 million consumer brands with a 500 person team. And like, you know, there's a lot more opportunity to expand out, whether that's across retail, wholesale, you know, marketplace, you know, D2C, whatever. So yeah, the, you know, big thing there is like you hire a person who's a retention marketer at a $100 million brand. Let's say they're in-house and now compared to your email agency, they make you 1% better. It's $1 million on somebody who probably costs $120 to $160,000 per year, depending on, you know, experience.
Yeah. Sweet. What's like in terms, less about the bucket stages and more of like tactically, like when you're hiring someone and you're trying to push them, you're trying to recruit and outreach, but the interview process still, you still have to vet them after you reach out to them. Like, yeah, you think they'd be a great fit, but I'm sure it's not like you just date one person, first date, and that's it. Boom, done. Let's get married. Like, how do you make sure that the candidate experience like is good, invaluable? This is the first time people are doing this, hiring and poaching like this. What would you recommend and advise brands do to keep in mind when they're building out that candidate experience?
Yeah.
Like the actual hiring and like onboarding process.
Well, sorry, hiring over the onboarding process?
I guess technically just hiring. Yeah, hiring process.
Number one, you see a lot, like because people are a little bit like, I'm going to put up a job description and they're used to hiring overseas talent. And they're like, I'm going to, you know, put a job description and then, oh, there's all of this spam. Let's just, you know, put a test project in front of all of them and see who does the test project. They think that it's okay to treat the same kind of like high level caliber talent in the US like that. And honestly, it just turns off good talent faster than anything else. I've had clients before who like, you know, we vet them and then we send them somebody and they're like, all right, great. Have them fill out this questionnaire. Now have them complete this test project. And I'm like, listen, they're jumping through hoops before they even talk to the brand. Like they're not excited about this anymore. Like they don't want to work for you. Like they're making great money. Like we have to sell them, not just, you know, vet them. And so I think it's recognizing that you have to sell yourself and get somebody super excited about you before you're being super demanding. And, you know, I will say like, candidly, it's more of an employer than an employee market these days. And so like employers can ask more things of candidates and like they just have more leverage and more power because there's fewer roles and there are people who want those roles. And so my big thing would be like test projects are cool, like assessments are cool, but like get the person excited before you then kind of put them through the ringer. So that way, like there's the stamina for them to continue through that process. That's probably number one.
Yeah, because they already have a job. They're doing this outside of work hours and during work hours, whatever. It's the lack of urgency on their end. They're not like rushing to leave in most cases. Like you said, you have to like nurture them. It's almost like you're acquiring a customer. You have to like nurture them and sell them and like market to them and cater to them a bit. So what else are we missing? Is it like any red flags, any like critical mistakes, anything to make sure you avoid, anything else you want to touch on? What would be helpful for you to like talk about?
For me to talk about it now, we hit on all my stuff. I'd say, you know, if you wanted me to riff on other stuff, I would say like big things in this specific industry is that everything changes so quickly. So like the number one cultural thing that you should look for on these individuals is curiosity in the space and finding ways where they're constantly learning. And if you're listening to this right now and you're on like D2C Twitter, like you get that like everyone's talking about stuff. There's inner lore. There's like, you know, inside jokes that only people in that space can understand. And like, that's a great thing when somebody's involved in that because they just understand what these other 8 and 9 figure brands are doing and testing. If this is something that they do as a job and they're not really passionate about it, it's really hard for you to find great talent at that stage because, you know, they're going to become outdated fairly quickly.
That's right. Yeah. No, I think that's huge. I think it's underrated once you get to a little bit bigger stage, or that's when you can use the undervalued, but curious and passionate and driven earlier on arbitrage we're talking about. Someone just hasn't gotten that break yet. So that's cool. Sweet, dude. Anything else you kind of would mention or you got your key things that you want to talk about?
I feel good. How do you feel?
Cool. Yeah. I we went a little bit longer than normal, but just want to make sure I didn't like ask the wrong questions or lead you the wrong way. if you're good, then I'm good.
I'm good, man. Yeah, that was
sweet. Great. Cool. Awesome. Well, Connor, thanks for the time, and catch you on the next episode.
Yeah, man.